Welcome to SestraCast, the Orphan Black podcast. I'm Jean McDonald, and I'm watching this series for the third time. My co-host, Kathy Campbell, is watching for the first time, so we make sure not to spoil any storylines beyond the episode we are currently discussing. But Kathy is on break right now, so I am super, super happy to have my guest co-host, Allison Sheridan, a dear friend and the person who introduced me to Orphan Black. Allison, welcome to SestraCast.
I am so excited to be here. I was thrilled when I heard you were starting this, and to be, you know, so instrumental in your beginning with this. It's I feel like the grandmother of the podcast or something like that.
You are. You really are. You turned me on to a show that I had known about, but I hadn't actually started watching because I didn't know anything about it. Like I saw it in Amazon Prime listed and I thought, I wonder what that's about. It's a weird name. Mm-hmm. That's a weird image, whatever. And then, it's been a couple of years now, back in 2015 when I was at your house and you and Steve, your awesome husband, said, "You don't watch Orphan Black. You should watch it. We'll watch episode one with you right now." And I'm like, I can't turn that down.
Well, I think we watched two, didn't we? Two in a row?
I thought we did. I couldn't, because one of the things about episode two of season one that is especially important to me is that's the one where Sarah pretends to be Katya, the German clone, and they have that German version of These Boots Are Made for Walking,
which is now
my signature karaoke song. In German.
In fact, I think you sang that for us when we were up in Bend, Oregon, going to see the eclipse together.
Oh, yeah. Yep. I think I did. It doesn't take much to get me to start in on that song. But yeah, that was, I feel like we watched a couple too. But what is interesting, you know, to me ever since then is I have watched season one, episode one with several people where I go like, I'll just watch episode one with you. And I never mind watching it again. It's such a good episode and it's so exciting. So I was completely hooked. And back then I think all of season one was out and season two. So season three hadn't come out yet. So basically I left your house, came back home to Portland and didn't leave the television for, you know, 20 hours because I couldn't stop watching it.
Oh, that's so funny. You know, I like the idea of binge watching, the idea of just getting, you know, a giant bag of potato chips and sitting on the couch for 3 days, but I can't do it. I get the most I've watched any show, I think, is two back to back.
Really?
I go through two. And even if it's, I think part of it is I like to savor stuff. I was able to savor the last of my Easter candy until Halloween when I was a little kid because I didn't want it to run out. So if it's something I really love and Orphan Black is in the top two or three shows I've ever seen in my lifetime. I mean, I just loved every minute of it. I didn't want it to get used up. So it'd be like, okay, no, we have to wait a week till we're allowed to have another one.
Well, here's a secret, Allison. It never gets used up. you just keep watching back, starting over. And today, while I was watching the episode that we're discussing and trying to, I'm putting it together, but of course I'm taking notes, which is a little distracting. And I thought, when I'm done with this podcast, I'm just going to take a week off and watch the whole damn show again, because I haven't watched it for pure pleasure since I started this podcast, even though it's pleasure to do the podcast and to talk about it.
But it's different.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it is totally different.
I also wanted to give a shout out to your show. It'll be two back now when you were talking with Kelly Gumont, who, of course, is awesome sauce. And always, I loved your conversation about who the best moms were. And I thought that was really interesting. And I found myself trying to put them in a pecking order. And I was thinking about, you know, there is no fiercer mother on earth than Helena. But then, man, Allison, dude, she'll just do anything. I mean, she's more clever and subtle in what she does to protect her family. But then again, you've got Helena, who might eat her way through, you know, raw metal to get to her, to save her child. You just don't know. And so that was interesting looking at them and thinking about Siobhan and what she's done. What an amazing mom she was, yeah, or is. And, you know, I can't believe you guys let Dr. Virginia Cody even get in the list.
Because she's above Bonnie, who is the worst.
Yeah. Which one's like, Bonnie?
Bonnie is Johansson's wife and the mother of Gracie.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's just so awful to Gracie, who doesn't deserve it at all. And, you know, like at least Virginia Cody takes care of her boys, even if, as Helena.
Yeah, except when she's busy cutting the tops of their heads off or something. Yes. You know, other than that, you're yeah, totally right.
Well, that's when Helena says you are shite mother.
One thing I did want to stick in here right away is I am really, really bad at names. And I don't want anybody listening to think that my inability to recall a name of this show has anything to do with apathy or not really paying attention. I'm pathologically bad at this. I worked at a company for 35 years where we wore name tags. So I simply never, I joined the company when I was 20. I never developed the skill of knowing somebody's name because I didn't have to. So I watched the show and I took notes. So I'm not joking. You and Kelly were talking about Felix. And I sat there going, Felix. Which one? Oh my God, it's Felix. You know, I mean, it's that, that's how much I can't remember names. So the fact that I was able to pull Dr. Virginia Cody out of the list was because I typed it into my notes so I could say it.
She's an interesting character, which we could talk about a bit. But before we get into this particular episode, I would like to know, since I know how I got turned on to Orphan Black by you and Steve, I have no idea how you guys decided to start watching it.
Well, Tom Merritt and Bram Brushwood do a podcast called Cord Killers, where the idea of Cord Killers is watching anything you want, when you want, where you want, and on any gosh darn device you want. And in doing Cord Killers, they have a bunch of different segments. So a lot of it's about the technology, like what is YouTube Red doing now? That you know, kind of technological part of it.
Yeah.
But they always do a segment on what are you watching? And they ended up spinning that off into something they call Spoiler in Time, because they would spoil the show. So they've got and it's really well done, because on the video you can see this flashing thing going, spoiler coming up for this next show. So you can skip over them and make sure you only watch the one you want to watch. But anyway, that's where I get pretty much all of my new content is from listening to Cord Killers.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. So, and they liked it apparently. And so,
Yeah. I don't know that they stuck with it all together, but they talked enough about it to get me interested in it. But one of the problems I have with the way TV works now, I mean, it used to be, you know, since I'm 170 years old, Thursday night at 8 o'clock, you turned on channel 4. Yes. And that's, you know, when Friends was NBC? On or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. NBC. Right. Because that was, they had a tagline that was
must
perfect.
See TV.
Must see TV was Thursday night at 4 o'clock or at 8 o'clock. But now, and when June came, you knew that the show would stop. And then in September, it would come back. But now you watch, you know, you watch a season of Orphan Black and then you're like, when's the next one? And
when's
you don't know.
One?
And then invariably, I'll be just sitting there going, man, I wonder when that's going to start. And somebody say, what are you talking about? It's been on for 3 weeks. And I have no warning system. I've tried apps. You and I played with an app on the iPad.
Yes, we did.
I forget what it was called, but I ended up.
Yideo or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yideo.
Like,
that's right. Y-D-I-O. And, but I don't know, I didn't keep up with telling it what I was watching and everything. And so I have no idea. So I've actually ended up screwing up not being able to watch a series because the entire series went by and they took it off the air again. Entire season. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, they'll start showing a season and you can watch the episodes maybe on their app or whatever, but after a certain time they stop those episodes. So if you miss the beginning, you're screwed.
Yeah. I missed a whole season, and then but I also pay for cable, and I had TiVo'd it, and the early ones had dropped off. So it was like, I paid for this through Netflix. I paid for it through my cable bill, and I still didn't get to watch it. It's like, they want you to pirate stuff sometimes. But anyway, that's a whole nother rant.
Well, that's a whole nother podcast. Well, we should talk about the episode we just watched.
Can I interrupt one more time?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Sorry.
Always.
This is what happens when you invite a podcaster on, right? I want to direct them. Do you ever let your guests talk about who's their favorite clone?
Yes, I let them talk about whatever they want to. I'm curious about that question with you. You want to go favorite clones? Why don't you tell me yours?
The three I do have trouble with trying to decide. I have to say, and I hope this doesn't anger the audience, Sarah isn't in the top three or four. Mm-mm. She's sort of necessary to the plot, but she's just not that interesting.
I don't think she's meant to be one of the favorites, actually. I think the other three are.
So I've got Cosima because she's a scientist, and plus, dude, she's hot, right?
She's very hot.
She's the hottest of all of them. I absolutely love her. There's some sort of animal likeness of Helena that I just, I mean, she's just so loyal and sincere and good in her soul. You know, she's good people who for no apparent reason is still good people, and her ferociousness and her comedy. Oh man, I will drop everything. I won't even crochet while I'm watching her on screen. Yeah. She's 100%. But then Allison, it has such strength. And I talked about that earlier, but when you watch her with Donnie and that development of those two characters has been so much fun. And I have no idea where we are in the plot with the two of them. So I
couldn't tell you, but let's just say, like, you know, they started out, Donnie was the slug on the couch, basically waiting to be waited on. And now he is, you know, Allison's partner in a drug business, which is pretty exciting. And he's trying to, I mean, he knows Allison as a clone. And when he found out about her being a clone, that's when he killed Dr. Leakey by accident. But, you know, he was pissed
funniest
off
scene
at Dr.
so far.
Yes.
Has the hot glue gun scene already gone by?
Oh, yeah, that was.
Okay, good. Sorry. Second funniest scene. Hot glue gun is number one. Second funniest is when he blows off Leakey's head. That was hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, Allison's reaction to that and working with Donnie, you know, apparently we now have to dig up the basement, the garage floor and pour him in there. That's what we'll do next. You know, how do you come up with this stuff? And yet that ridiculous smile and the little, you know, the little headband, and she just looks like a little cheerleader going to school with her kids and everything.
Yeah.
She is awesome. But there's another one to consider. I got to get the scorpion Pupak into here.
Yes.
I mean, the fact that Tatiana Maslany plays that character too
isn't that incredible?
It is just, I mean, it's just wonderful. It's one of the best things. I just love it.
I like to do my scorpion voice, but I prefer to do my Ukrainian. I really like your hairs, and I like your accent too. You and me both. Hairs. We like Helena, and we like her accent, and we will probably indulge ourselves a few times
from time to time. It might happen. My accent's not as good as yours, but I'll give it my best shot.
Where are these mangoes? I would like to see these mangoes. I was actually doing that for my brother and niece today, and they're looking at me like, do we need to call the people with the white van?
What are the mark-faced boys?
The mark-faced boys. What a great line. Somebody had to think of that. And
I almost asked you which one Mark was. I had my notes to ask you. I was Mark is the mark-faced boys.
Yes, Mark of the mark-faced. He's also mark-faced. Mark.
He is.
Yes. He's the most neutral looking of the mark face boys, at least so far, because the rest of them have had scars or mustaches or whatever. Anyway,
and, you know, and that does talk to the magic of Tatiana Maslany, is that they do things to make them look different, but she is a different human being in every single clone.
Yeah.
And the actor who plays the mark face boys is not. He's sort of like the same guy with a scar. He doesn't have the breadth that I don't think anybody on earth has the breadth that she does.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really hard, high bar to ask somebody to jump over. And I I feel like now this being my fourth time watching the Mark-Faced Boys, I am a little bit more appreciative of what they have done and how they, what they can do. Because the problem with the, with, let's call them who they are, the cast or clones, is that from, you know, comparing them to the Leda clones, is the Leda clones were all separated and grew up in different places. And so they, you know, there were personalities and hairdos and clothes and everything that could be assigned to each one. But the casters were all raised together and,
you know, and they're all in the army.
And they're all in the army. So they can't have crazy hair, you know, and they can't, you know, they have the one guy with the mustache, but otherwise, you know, so I think the fact, I think Rudy is a very good character. I mean, he is crazy looking.
And, which one's Rudy? You know, is he the one with the scar?
Rudy is the scar guy. Okay. Yeah. And he's the first one that we see and understand, oh my God, they have some crazy boy clones, because he's like naked in this, you know, prison cell. And then he,
but they
like,
don't have any weak ones. They don't have any that are simpering,
well, that's
or
not
they don't have
entirely
any that are gay
true.
Or they don't have, their
well, yeah, they don't have gay
ones. Difference.
Yeah.
They're different.
Yeah.
They're not, you know,
yeah,
they don't walk differently. They don't, you know,
yes. Yeah, that's true. And I was talking about this with somebody, probably Kathy, like, where, you know, oh yeah, where Sarah is supposed to be Rachel a few episodes ago. So when, what's his name? Evil Ferdinand comes into town, but they can't have Rachel see him because she's got an eye missing and they don't want him to find out about that. So Sarah pretends to be Rachel
right.
Allison pretends to be Sarah, which is really great. It's probably episode 2 of season 3. Anyway, just watching Sarah be dressed up like Rachel, but still lumbering around like a lumberjack kind of thing that she has. And it's like, yep, that's not how Rachel walks.
You know, one of the, I used to watch All My Children, and were you an All My Children
too?
Fan?
Yes. Oh my God. I was so addicted to that as a kid.
So in that show, Adam Chandler had a twin brother. What was Adam's brother's name?
Right. Crazy Adam's crazy brother. I remember
what
the
was
twin
his
brother.
Name though. I can't remember.
I can't
his name.
Remember.
Well, it'll come to one of us, but anyway, Adam. So Adam was this big business guy and his brother was this slightly loony, very flower girl, you know, flower power kind of, you know, loves everybody artist guy.
Yeah.
And they used to pretend to be each other all the time. And you could absolutely tell which one of them it was instantly. And there was one where the funny brother was playing Adam trying to be to get a divorce, I think it was, from Erica Kane. And it to me, I was watching this actor pretending to be one character, pretending to be another character, and you could 100% tell who it was pretending to be who. And that's, you know, like what Tatiana can do, that you could tell it was someone pretending to be somebody, pretending to be somebody.
Yes.
And that level, there's not a lot of people on earth who could do that.
No.
This guy only played two. Stuart.
Yes.
Stuart Chandler.
Stuart. Oh, yeah. Right. Oh, God. Dude, that is a blast from the past, Allison, because I'm pretty sure I was still in high school when that was happening. But
really? Yeah, I was.
Yeah, it was. Because I. Yeah. Well, yeah. So one of the funny things about this episode that we're going to discuss is there's no Allison in it, even though there's Allison on show. And I'm sorry about that. I didn't really plan it that way. I just was saying, oh yes, episode 5.
One
and
of your earliest shows, I actually pulled a clip out of it because you said, Allison is the smartest person I know, or something like that. You said something really great about Allison. I just clipped it and I've been hanging on to it, waiting for a time I'm going to need to use that. Hey, you know, Gene said it. Stand by. I didn't.
Yes. I would not deny it. I believe that about Allison Hendricks or Sheridan, regardless of how many L's they have in their name, which is another problem that I've been spelling your name wrong, because you are a 2L American Allison, and Allison Hendricks is a 1L Canadian Allison.
I did not know that.
Yeah, the British, and they're, for the Canadians, they spell it slightly differently. But yeah, so this episode, this is called Scarred by Many Frustrations. And As with every episode of this season, the title comes from Eisenhower's farewell speech, and I dug it up and got the whole context of the quote. And I think it's again, like other ones I've read, kind of like, you know, foreboding. And mm-hmm. that totally describes Orphan Black to a T, and the future of American geopolitics in 1960 to a T. And so it goes, it's about, so Eisenhower says that the world needs to become a proud confederation of mutual trust and respect. But he says such a confederation must be one of equals. The weakest must come to the conference table with the same confidence as do we, protected as we are by our moral, economic, and military strength. That table, though scarred by many past frustrations, cannot be abandoned for the certain agony of the battlefield. Boom. Mm. So thank you, Dwight David Eisenhower, our former president, for, this is the speech where he also discussed the military-industrial complex. And given that he was a general, we'd like to listen to him about, you know, his thoughts on geopolitics. Yeah, yeah. And in this episode, it's a very much a Helena and Sarah episode. So last week we saw that Sarah got waylaid by the Castor boys, Rudy and Mark, when they were trying to track down the bones of the baby had the Castor DNA. And that is what Mark was supposed to be delivering to the Castor project. And that's why he was undercover with the Prolethians. That's what we learned, is that he was not there as a true believer, but as a spy there in order to get the genetic material of the original Castor line that might help heal the Castors of their affliction.
So let me ask you a question. There's a scene where Dr. Cody has goes up to Mark in the hospital. They've instantly fixed a terrible gunshot wound that he apparently was able to run on his leg. Mm-hmm. And then, but they show where he's burned off this scar, mm-hmm. or he's got a scar where he burned off some marking that apparently shows him as being a Castor clone.
Yes.
And then he says, I had to do that so they believed me. So he really wasn't. He lied.
He was lying. Yeah. No, not because he had allegiance, but because, he had allegiance throughout. Yes. To the Castors, not the Prolethians.
Oh, okay.
But he
okay.
didn't burn off the scar until after he left the Castors. Oh. After he left the Prolethians with Gracie, and he and Gracie got married, and he, on their honeymoon or whatever you call it, he locked himself in the bathroom with a blowtorch, where, you know, apparently he carries one around, and he blowtorched off his Castor tattoo, which is a Castor and Pollux, the two horse heads from mythology. And he didn't want to be a Castor anymore. He wanted to go on and have a life with Gracie.
Okay. But so he is really only has allegiance to Gracie, not to anything
yes.
else.
At this point, he would like to, you know, be with Gracie, and, you know, they did actually get married, and he, let's see. So when in this episode where Dr. Cody is saying like what happened with the scar, she also says, and I guess you had to wear this ring. and he's like, yeah, you know, I did what I had to do, acting as if he married Gracie just to keep up his cover, but that was not true. He was Gracie's protector at the end against Henrik, her father, who was going to beat her for trying to escape, and then he escaped with Gracie, and they got married.
But her baby is one of the babies that was injected into her?
Right, yes. Right? Helena.
Her creepy dad?
Yes, her creepy dad. He was creepy. And
that was another question I had in there. So as I recall, and this is now way back a couple of years for me when I saw this, Helena mm-hmm. and Gracie were impregnated at the same time. Gracie thinks mm-hmm. of the clones as subhuman, And yet Helena sort of protects her, doesn't she? Or vice versa?
Yes,
one of them helps the other?
Yeah. Helena helps Gracie. I mean, first she opens Gracie's eyes to the situation and says, like, why do you let them treat you like a broodmare? You know, like, why? She first couldn't understand why Gracie wasn't happy to be pregnant because the two of them were pregnant together. And then Gracie was like, you dumbass. Don't you know, like, this isn't my baby. This is your baby. And I'm carrying it. And then Helena was like, don't do it on my account. And, you know, why?
Wait, Gracie was carrying Helena's baby?
Yes.
Oh,
one of the one.
That.
Yeah, it's creepy.
Maybe
as
I never
it can
figured
be.
It out.
Yeah. So anyway, but she did in the previous episode, episode four, she lost the baby. So she had a miscarriage.
Right.
And then that's when her mother, her evil mother, Bonnie, just said, like, you get out of here. Like, we were to you because of the baby.
Yeah.
And now you lost it. And so that was pretty terrible.
Yeah. Okay. So, so we've got them both locked in this apparently Mexican jail. Where did they?
That's what we don't know for sure, but Sarah says, like, it's probably Mexico. It's somewhere hot and like a desert.
And whose army are they in?
The U.S. Army,
which happens to be stationed in Mexico right now. Okay.
Well, you know, Canadians made this show, so let's. Sorry, Canadians, don't at me.
No. I'm thinking maybe they just think of all of that as South America to them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not clear where they're supposed to be, and it doesn't really matter. It's just
hot and dusty.
Hot and dusty. It has one imaginary scorpion, which is Helena's imaginary friend, Pupak. And
Pupak's been her friend since she was a little kid locked in a cage.
Yes.
That's interesting.
That's right. Yeah, interesting friend to pick. Now, in her mind, in the of the character Helena, Pupak is real, of course, but to we observers, we know Pupak is an imaginary friend. But to the actors themselves, so the actor Tatiana Maslany, that scorpion is an actual scorpion. It's not a robot or anything.
That they actually had tryouts for which was
for
be
the scorpions?
For the scorpion part. Yeah.
Well, they should have. It's an important part, right? And I think I read somewhere too, they said that scorpion was a more, cooperative actor than a lot of people they've worked with. I don't know. Yeah. So, yeah, it opens up and Helena's in her cell and Pupak is there talking to her, and Helena pulls out like a blade or something sharp and starts cutting into herself again. And Pupak says, guilty pleasures won't help you escape.
Yeah. I didn't realize that the first time through that she was doing that to herself.
Yeah.
She's quite bendy to have gotten as many holes in herself as she had.
Yes. She's bendy. That's right. And then now this part doesn't make total sense to me, but Pupak leaves Helena's cell and goes scurrying outside into the cell next door. And there's Sarah. Now, I don't see how the imaginary scorpion can do a thing outside of the purview of the person who imagines them, but that's okay. It just bothered me this time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so, and that's the opening. So Sarah's in the next cell to Helena, and basically that's the main point of this episode. There's a couple of things that happen with Cosima and a couple of things that happen with S and Felix and Gracie, which normally I just would like to dispense of, and so we can just talk about Helena.
I did have one question on when Cosima meets Shea, and they're all hot for each other and everything. Okay, that's really cute, and everything was fun with that. I've never trust her. The minute I saw her, I thought there was something off about her. But who's taking pictures of them would be a question to stick in your head, right?
That's a really good point, and I don't know.
Because they show the camera shutter going.
I think it must be Delphine or somebody who is an agent of Delphine. Delphine's in charge of Dyad right now.
Okay.
But she said to Helena, sorry. She said, I don't know how you can apologize for not remembering names, because I never even get the clones straight as I'm talking about them. So yeah, Delphine, in the first episode, Delphine comes back from Europe and she sees Cosima and she says, I can't do this anymore. I need to keep my promise to you to take care and protect all your sisters equal. I need to love them all equally. Okay. And I can't. And so they break up, and it's one of the saddest scenes ever. And boy, Tatiana is really good at, like, especially through the character of Cosima, that acting of, you know, what a broken heart looks like on the outside. Mm-hmm. And it broke a lot of hearts. Delphine and Cosima were a favorite combo in Clone Club land, and a lot of them were very disappointed when they opened up season 3 and broke them up. But yeah,
I didn't have any love lost for her, but she made Cosima happy.
Yeah, I agree. The whole way she got involved with Cosima was so shady.
Yeah.
So Felix is getting Cosima to go on dates. That's basically,
which
you
is
know,
fun.
This little B plot or C plot, however you want to look at it. And, you know, we love Felix, and anything he does is just
awesome.
Totally adorable.
Yeah.
So getting Cosima to go on lesbian dating site called Sapphire, and then Cosima waiting in a bar, waiting for this person to come with that awkwardness that anybody who has ever gone on a computer date knows. And I know you and Steve have been together so long, you predate computer dates.
Yes,
so
we predate computers pretty much.
But I can say from experience, it's not the funnest moment. And then this beautiful girl, Shay, exotic, but, you know, and smart and funny and everything, shows up. And so Cosima's on a hot date for sure.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the whole thing for Cosima. I mean, there's, you know, some talk between Cosima and Shay. There's the photographer. We don't know who it is, but my theory is it's somebody from Dyad. You know, it's a nice scene for Cosima. Good for Cosima.
Yeah, it was always very enjoyable.
Yeah. And then the other person who this episode follows a bit is Gracie. And at this point, Gracie is all alone because her mother's kicked her out. Mark is gone. And so she goes to arts.
Yeah, that was interesting. Was it Sarah who told her, if you ever have any trouble, go to this guy?
Go to this guy. And he is that guy. You know, Art will take care of things in a rational manner. And that is one of the reasons we like Art, is that somebody has to be a grown-up
rational
in this group.
You know, I know I'm supposed to feel sorry for Gracie because, I mean, she's had a pretty rough life and things have been weird from day one since she was born.
Mm-hmm.
But she is in all ways just a really annoying teenager. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, just classically annoying. And then I want to get drunk. And the drunk stuff was pretty funny.
That was funny.
But, you know, where they try to convince her, well, why don't you have a cocktail before you go out dressed like that?
Yeah.
And we find you dead on the street for it, you know?
There's a couple things in here that come out from the Gracie part is first of all, how wonderful is Siobhan?
Oh.
She just takes her into her home and she calls her Chicken.
The whole time, Felix is making up names for her. I think of this one, he calls her Baby Jesus. Come on, Baby Jesus, we'll find you some clothes.
Yeah, Felix is not being, Felix doesn't get.
Not feeling it.
No, he is not.
But it was good how Mrs. S is saying, yeah, you know, you were a pain when you got here. And he says, what are you talking about? He says, you were a delinquent at 6 or something like that.
Yeah. And he was like, well, I wasn't fully formed. I think that's the funniest line from Felix in this episode. There's dancing, Felix dancing, showing Gracie how to dance.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
That's
but
cute. Along with Helena, anytime Felix is on screen, I'm in love. I mean, I just love everything.
I agree. Totally. So, yeah. So Gracie is being taken in by Siobhan, but she really wants to go out and do something wild. She never has. She just got married and her husband's taken off, and then they sort of throw a party for her and let her get drunk at home, which is that's what a good parent does.
Exactly.
Let you figure this out yourself, you know, after you've experienced it once. But unfortunately, Gracie is doubled over in pain at one point, and they don't know what's going on with her and calling 911. And then
we don't find out what's wrong with her, though.
No, we don't find out what's wrong with her, but we find out whatever is wrong with her is the same thing that is wrong with one of the women that the Castor boys had slept with.
Oh.
So so you would have missed this. This would have been in episode one of this season. But okay. There was once the Rudy broke out of the jail with Seth, who was his brother, they went to a hotel with a prostitute, but they didn't let on that there were two of them.
Right.
They were
kind of swapped.
Very. And then she went, you know, to the police to report them. And so that at the end where Art meets up with this woman and she has these glasses on.
Yeah.
She has the same eyes, that's like super bloodshot eyes.
Oh, and, interesting.
You know, okay. This comes from all along the Castors, when they have that kind of, you know, intimate contact, they take notes, they take hair samples from, you know, and it's very, very weird. We don't know exactly why, but in this episode, I think we start to understand that something about what they're doing with the Castors, you know, has to do with them infecting women. So, it's real creepy.
I missed that subtlety. I was just thinking, I'm sorry, you had a miscarriage this morning. Maybe this isn't what you should have been doing. You know, dancing and drinking and carousing as such. Maybe a little, little, you know, rest on the couch and binge watch some TV.
Yes. I agree. And that was my first thought as well. It's like, oh, she's just, you know, she overdid it. But it's more than that. There's something going on. And it's the fault of the Castors. And we don't know exactly what. But we know it's not just Gracie.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's this other woman whose name I can't remember. So... All right, so that clears the deck for us to talk about Helena, Pupuk, and Sarah. And there's so many great moments between the two of them because, so this is episode 5. In the last season, you know, episode 10 is when Mrs. S made the deal with Paul that they could take Helena if she could get Kira and Sarah out of the dyad. Mm. And so that Sarah was not privy to this deal. And when she found out about it, she was very mad. So she's been on this tear to find Helena and to help Helena, as have Cosima and Allison have been supporting her in this. Even Allison said oh, the poor thing, you know, we have to do something for her. And so it's very clear they're bonded as sisters, especially with Helena. Who they hadn't met until the night of the clone dance party.
When was that?
That was also season, the last season finale. So the clones get to meet, so Allison and Cosima get to meet Helena for the first time.
Oh, so this is only a couple of episodes after they've met her.
Yeah, exactly. So they've bonded together. Okay. You know, they have this big slumber party at Felix's with Kira, and they do this dance, you know, scene, which is incredible because it's all four of them dancing with Felix.
From a filming perspective, that's one of the most phenomenal things ever done. That was astonishing.
Yes. And then Helena is kidnapped the next morning. So none of them has seen her since the clone dance party. And Sarah especially is, you know, she's bonded to her because they're twin sisters. They're not just clones. In fact, they're not clones. There's two children formed from one egg. So they're twins. And
how does that make them not sisters? Or not clones? Oh.
Because they're not clones.
They're cloned from somebody else. They're not clones of each other.
Right.
Doesn't that still make you clone?
They're clones, but that's not, they have a more, they're both clones, but they are also real actual sisters, you know, biologically speaking, I guess you would say. So Sarah is finally there with Helena, which is what she wanted all along, although she didn't really want to be locked up in a cell. And they start arguing right away because Sarah is like, I'm so sorry. Are you okay? oh, I had nothing to do with that. And Helena is very cold towards her.
She didn't buy it at all. Why would she assume that Sarah did that? In fact, who told her that Sarah did that to her?
Well, Dr. Cody. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Who are you going to believe? Yeah. Come on, Helena.
Shite mother. or your twin sister. So.
Right. My favorite quote in this whole segment of the show was when Sarah says, "I should leave you here to rot." And Helena says, "I live for 4 months in a broom closet. I do not rot."
Right. And that's like their first scene together. There's a Pupak, the scorpion, is all part of these conversations, at least with Helena, and really like egging her on not to believe Sarah. And Pupak says she'll melt you like butter.
Oh, and then they start talking about butter, right?
All right. And I thought, well, that's Helena, so they're talking about food, but actually butter has a more important role to play.
Right.
A little bit down the line. Yeah, basically. It's up to Sarah to win Helena back over. And I think she does a really good job of that. And it's as quite heart-wrenching when she talks about how she behaved when she was a young mother herself, and that she felt tied down and she would leave Kira with Mrs. S, like, for days at a time. And she says, like, one day Mrs. S said, "No, you can't see her." And Helena's like, "Well, why did she say that?" And she said, "Well, I was high," or something like that. And she was right. She was right to do it. But instead, I just left with Vic. That's why Sarah and Vic had left Kira behind. And when episode 1 of season 1, when Sarah is coming back, she's coming back from all of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So Vic was early on in this before we mm-hmm. even meet them. That's interesting. I didn't know that. I didn't remember that.
Yeah. And then she starts, choking up and crying, saying, like, "I missed a whole year of my daughter's life because I was, being stubborn. So if you want to be stubborn, go right ahead."
Okay, I was just about to ask you, why did she tell that story right now? But that's why, because I don't want to miss a year of my life with you either.
Yeah, and you don't want to miss a year of your life by being, hard-headed.
Yeah.
So that really was moving.
Right.
So the other person who comes back into the picture in this episode, which Kathy, I know she will watch this episode eventually, will be happy to see, is Paul. She loves Paul.
Oh, she likes Paul?
Yeah, she loves him. She loves him. So, well, he is quite handsome. Come on, Allison.
What? If you like that type. Not my
type.
Yeah,
well, that's true.
But I found myself watching this trying to remember why Paul is with the army. So he was... who's the original clone who was dead that stepped in front of the train in the first season?
Beth Childs.
So Paul was the monitor for Beth, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but over time, I thought Paul turned into a good guy.
He was a good guy, but...
Not all that good?
Dyad. Well, so there's a reason that Helena calls him Dirty Paul. He had been a monitor for Beth because he had something to hide from his time in Afghanistan in the military. So they had something on him, Dyad did. And then when Leaky was out of the picture, and also the guy who was Rachel's bodyguard, who got killed in season 2, I can't remember his name, but the one who tried to kill Helena, the one who tried to kill Sarah in Rachel's bathroom, and then Helena comes in and she makes short work of him. Anyway, there was an opening in Rachel's staff and Paul took it. Let's put it that way.
Okay. But that doesn't make him part of the army.
He's been out of the army and he's this guy with the checkered past that's being blackmailed. However, he can't work for Rachel ongoing because he's too loyal to Sarah, and he ends up basically disappearing. And Rachel doesn't know what happened to him, and nobody else does. And then he shows up into season two, and he's got his military uniform back on. He's been in the army the whole time, and he's like also undercover, and he is involved with the Castor Project, which is an army project.
But so, hang on, which way is he undercover? Is he really army, or he was an army guy undercover working for Rachel, working for? I'm lost.
As far as I can read it, which, you know, having watched it a few times, but you never know. He's always been army.
Okay.
And
does he really care about Sarah, though?
He does really care about Sarah.
Hmm.
So.
Okay. Trust
me.
Okay.
Trust me. And then when he comes in, you know, to the Castor base in who knows where in the desert, he's really upset that she's there, because he's already told her, like, you need to stop looking for Helena. I did all this to protect you. But if you keep pushing it, they're going to come after you. And then when he comes back from whatever trip to Washington he was on and she's there, he's like, this is not good. And all the people there at the Castor base, like one of the Mark Face boys and Cody, you know, are saying like, Paul is not going to be happy when he sees that Sarah is here, because they know that he has a thing for her.
Yeah. So, now, does he just like her because she looks like Beth?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that, first of all, you know, in season one, when Sarah meets him and is pretending to be Beth, she kind of blows his socks off because Beth was not like that with him.
Oh,
so.
Okay. I do remember that's one of the sexiest things I've seen on TV. That was a very sexy scene.
Agreed.
Sexy time.
As I say, you get to see everybody's butts in this show. So Paul is not happy. And then an interesting thing is happening where Paul, he tries to say to Helena that Parsons, the one who had the top of his head cut off, you know, that's what he would have wanted to do for his brothers. Mm-hmm. And because Helena's saying, like, you guys are not great. Look at what you did to Parsons. I think he disagree with your assessment of this being a family, you know.
But they said, oh, he was just trying to help his brothers because it would help us understand what was wrong with him as we were able to take his brain apart. Did you ever watch Hannibal, the movie?
No.
Hannibal? So in the second Hannibal, I think it is, there's an absolutely hysterical, it's a horrible movie. Don't watch it. Steve makes me watch these things.
Wasn't going to, but
yeah.
No,
okay. Just in case
won't.
There was a chance you might, but there's this hysterical scene where Anthony Hopkins has taken the top of the head off just like they did to Parsons. And I couldn't stop thinking about that scene when watching this in Orphan Black, but in this scene, Anthony Hopkins is takes a slice of the guy's brain and then fries it up in a pan and then feeds it to him.
To the guy?
Yeah, to the guy whose brain it was. It's Ray Liotta. And you hate his character. He's a horrible, horrible person in this.
He's always horrible.
Yeah, but it just comes up really, really funny. And the whole time Clarice is having to sit and she's dressed in this gown and everything that Anthony Hopkins has forced her to wear. And it's this fancy dinner party, but what they're serving is his brains. Sorry, I couldn't help but think of that scene when I saw Parsons because it looked just
for
the dinner party.
It's okay. Actually, a couple of episodes before that, I guess the one I watched with Kelly, episode 3, where they took the dead Castor and dissected him in Felix's bathtub.
Yeah, that was. I had forgotten about that. When I heard you mentioning that, I was thinking, I got to go back and see that scene again.
I'm telling you, you're never done with Orphan Black. You can always watch it again. So Paul goes into the morgue or whatever it is, and he unzips the bag where Parsons is, and he's looking at the body, and then he's looking at the you know, head hardware that they were using to, I don't know what they were doing, but, you know, it's a torture instrument if you look at it a certain way. And I definitely thought, okay, this is where Paul is starting to really question what they're doing there and whether that's for the benefit of anyone, you know. It's yeah. definitely not for the benefit of Helena or Sarah, but even the cast or boys, if you accept that they are deserving as the other clones of having research done to keep them from dying, the research doesn't look very wholesome.
That's the understatement of the century.
Yeah.
And it also, I never get a sense that the whole caster group really cares about them as people as much as mm-hmm. cares about them as weapons.
Yes.
Where the Sestras care about each other because they care about each other. Now, Dyad maybe doesn't care about them other than for their research purposes, but the women care about each other. And
That's right.
It's a more pure love.
Yeah. And they are. They're very, that's what we like about this show is all the sisterhood.
Sisterhood, yeah. There's scenes in later episodes that I know haven't aired yet that where you get even more sense of how if they needed to cut the top of one of the other Sestra's heads off, they'd ask her first.
Right.
You know? And I think that gets back to why Sarah was so angry that Mrs. S had traded her for Helena. Was she would have never said yes to that. And that's one of the rules, you know, we take care of each other. Maybe I could choose to sacrifice myself for her, but you can't make, it's not right to do that to her without my consent.
That's exactly right. And she was saying that so mad, like, that's not your decision to make.
Yeah, exactly.
So
but as a mother,
yeah,
would I make that the same decision, you know?
Yeah, I would. Actually, everybody in the show besides Sarah would have made that trade. They sort of go around in the beginning of the season where Sarah's complaining about this, and basically Felix and Delphine and Cosima, even, you know, other people are like, well, you know, she Art was like, yeah, I would have done that.
Yeah. So,
but nobody loves Helena the way that Sarah loves Helena now. So, yeah, so there's Sarah and Helena, of course, are going to plot to break themselves out. And Sarah did a really clever thing of getting herself into the infirmary by trying to beat up one of the guards. And she steals a pair of tweezers, which she sticks in her mouth somehow.
Yeah.
And gets it back to the cell. And then they have to swing the tweezers over to from
five,
Sarah's cell.
Four. Three.
Right. They can count. They know exactly, you know, the amount of time it takes from when they open up the building to when they get to this prison cell. Plus they know the timing of the security camera. Honestly, if you have two prisoners in your whole base with that many men, like, wouldn't you just set one man out in front of their door of their prison? I guess.
Wait a minute. How many men are on this base?
I think there's 11 million.
Exactly.
That's what I heard, right?
Exactly. Approximately 11 million.
11 million, yeah. That could spare one guy. That could spare a million, you know, to just
does
guard
Does she know
Sarah
how funny she is? Does she realize
Helena?
Does she realize she's being that funny?
Yeah. I think she does know she knows. She never forgets something. And certainly in this episode where Clara, now I've made up a clone, Sarah says to Helena, you don't even want to get up here. You've just been institutionalized your whole life. And then Helena does not let that go. And she says, institutionalized to be doing anything. And then when Sarah gives her the tweezers, Helena says, I think you were institutionalized too. And Sarah's like, I am sorry I ever said that, which she should be, because that was actually what Virginia Cody said. Oh. And she kind of took it to heart.
Oh.
So, yeah, so they get the tweezers over to Helena. Helena unshackle herself. Then she pulls out all the butter, which... She'd been saving the butter and from her meals and storing them in, you know, a little cubby hole in the brick that she had covered up.
Okay.
And she found a a bar in the window that was a little bit loose. And so she broke it. And then she covers herself up with butter, which is interesting, and eventually shimmies out of the jail cell and waits for the guard and breaks the camera. So then the guard has to come. And
it climbs up there like a monkey.
Like a monkey, yes. I thought, is that real? If that's Tatiana as well, she is just like, she's more amazing than I already thought her to be.
Yeah.
That seemed like a stunt person's job, but it was pretty impressive. And then she impales the guy. I didn't get exactly how she impaled him on what, but Helena sneaks up on him and the guard, and then Sarah's like, okay, get the keys. And Helena's like, no, now we are even.
Come on, Helena.
Yeah, I was surprised. Like, obviously I knew what was going to happen, but this time, especially when Sarah said the thing about don't hold a grudge, and kind of forgotten how she said that. And I was like, yeah, Helena, you can't hold a grudge. Helena's also, you know, she's a little bit like a little kid, you know, like, yeah, now we're even, you know.
You know, it's funny you mentioning I knew what was going to happen. I don't care how many times I watch something, I always hope it's still going to end up okay. Like, no, not this time. This time you're going to go back and get her.
Right. So, yeah, so that's basically, there's Helena dodging guards around the base and getting herself up over the wall of the compound. And Paul is reading this book, which is Parsons' logbook, like the other Castor clones. He has the logbook of intimate contacts. And that's when Paul is starting to put it together. And then that's when the show comes back around to Art and the woman who had gone to the hotel room with the two Castor clones, and she has this terrible condition in her eyes, and then Gracie has the same thing, and boom, that's the end of the story. So
much fun to go back through this. You know, you are making me want to start over.
You should.
One thing I wanted to say about a show like what you're creating here, it causes an interesting effect. Back in the old days, Channel 4, you know, NBC at 8 o'clock on Thursday night, like we talked about, one of the reasons you did that was because Friday morning, everybody would be talking about what happened on must-see TV, right? The classic water cooler conversation. And this genre of podcast that follows a TV series recreates that. So we're watching Star Trek with Mission Log with Ken Ray and John Champion. And they're watching every single episode of Star Trek that was ever made. It's going to take like 7 years to do this in weekly episodes. It's insane. And they start with the original series. They even did the animated series. And they went into Next Generation. Now we're into Deep Space Nine. And I was on the elliptical at the gym. And my friend Dorothy says, oh, did you see Star Trek last night? And it was exactly like I'd been transported back into 1986, you know, and the same thing happened. Mm-hmm. I was talking to Bart in Ireland and he said the same thing. Did you see Star Trek last night? What did you think? And, you know, we've all seen them. We've seen them over and over and over again, but we're watching them together. And it's sort of bringing everybody back into that same timeline thing. And I think that's really cool. And that's what the Sestra cast is bringing to people who love that show.
I started it really just because I was tired of having nobody to talk to about Orphan Black, you know, on a regular basis. And it was season 5 and I was very stressed about the show in its final season. Like, how can I watch this with nobody to like download with afterwards? But
yeah,
that didn't end up happening because Kathy said she would like to watch Orphan Black and she'd watch it from the beginning, and I was like, yeah, we could do that. But I'm still waiting to get to season 5 with Kathy. But when we get to the final episode of season 5, I was already thinking about it. I need to find a good location where we can watch it with a bunch of people if they want to.
That would be fun,
you know. So, or just, you know, have Kathy come over. She's come over a couple times. We've done some stuff together. In fact, we did a commentary track for season 1, episode 1 as a bonus, member bonus for The Incomparable during the membership drive. So basically we watched it together and we taped it together. Like we taped our, how we would talk about it together. And so you could, you know, like you get those with DVD bonuses. So you could watch it and just listen to me and Kathy like talk as if we're sitting there with you watching it.
Oh, funny.
So that's a pretty fun interest. It was funny because at some point I'm like, we're not talking. We're just watching. We need to talk again. This is a commentary track.
But you're too into the show, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard. Because also I, you know, I hate people who talk during movies and stuff like that. So
you've trained yourself not to, and then you're supposed to.
I trained myself. Yeah. Anyway, well, Allison, I am so excited and so happy that we had a chance to finally do this and have you on the show that, thanks to you, exists.
Well, I'm really glad you had me on because I know we've been talking about it ever since you got the idea to do this show, and I've been waiting for my invitation. So this has been really fun. I do think the cohesiveness, though, that you get with the way you've designed this to watch it with somebody who hasn't watched it is really, really cool. That's a neat technique. I like it.
Yeah, it's fun, and but as I said, when I'm done with Kathy, I'm going to watch the whole thing again. Allison, tell people where they can find you on the internet in case they want to check into NoSillaCast, your podcast, or some of the other things you do.
Well, thanks. I have a website at podfeet.com, P-O-D-F-E-E-T. And I do three main shows right now. The NoSillaCast is a tech podcast with an ever so slight Apple bias. And that's mostly just me. But every other week, I have a gentleman named Bart Bouchatz from Ireland, the one I was watching Star Trek with. And he does a segment called Security Bits. So it's mostly mainstream tech with some accessibility stuff during the first half. And then the second half is talking about security things that have happened the last couple of weeks. We're also doing a show together where he's teaching me to program in an audio podcast, believe it or not, called Programming by Stealth. We're 54 episodes into that. I should mention the NoSillaCast has not missed a show in 13 years. Every week.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. It's a record. And then I have an interview show called A Chit Chat Across the Pond, where I just talk to interesting tech people. Like I interviewed a 22-year-old blind woman yesterday who was talking about Braille literacy and the importance of literacy for the blind. It was really, really interesting, really fun show. Lupita was her first name. What was her last name? Well, we're going to end with me not being able to remember her name.
Well, and yes, if you want to Lupita find Salazar. Lupita Salazar?
Yeah.
Nice. Well, you'll give me all those links and I'll put them in our show notes.
Absolutely.
Then all of our episodes are available at sestracast.com, which is part of the Incomparable Network. And I am on Twitter thing.
The Twitter thing.
At Mac Genie. And Kathy's still there at Mrs. Soup. And we look forward to talking to you next week about more Orphan Black.